And
great. Good evening. Yeah, thank you guys for your prayers for him. I know my dad would really pray for him more psychologically right now. And maybe that's a bad word, but just he's down emotionally is the word. He's down and just discouraged. And pray that obviously that the blood clot goes away, but that just emotionally he can see God's bigger plan in this and overcome it. And so we're going to probably cut out a little early just to go to Grand Rapids to try to encourage him, because it sounds like he's down. But would appreciate your prayers. We're Chad and Marlena. Good evening. It's a privilege to be here tonight and to just be able to share with you how you guys have partnered with us down in Guatemala. It's working. Okay. Many of you already know. In fact, you guys a couple of years ago sent a team down where Guatemala's at. What we'll do is I'm just going to kind of share a little bit about demographics down there, and then we're going to talk about the family, our family. Marlena's going to share a little bit. This is my better half, by the way, Marlena. And then we'll go more in depth about what we're doing down there now. So Guatemala has a lot of rich beauty, but it's contrasted with a lot of poverty. It's probably a little difficult to see, but this is the dump up here that 10, 12,000 people support, depend on for their livelihood. And these are some squatter villages, which our main center at AMG is located right next to the dump. And so there's a big disparity between the rich and the poor. So in the city, the way just life for people is really difficult. A lot of lack of opportunities, lack of resources, jobs, just lack of hope in the city amongst a lot of rich, wealthy people that just kind of ignore that reality. Sorry, my slide. Is that my deal? This is, it's contrasted by the, you think this is my projector, by the way? Should I make a change on the setting, or? It's all right. It's pictures. Okay. And then there's the other side of it that's rural area. It's just a lot of Mayan. There's 26 Mayan groups that are represented across Guatemala, and in there it's just there's not a whole lot of opportunity at all. And so my deal just isn't working. Sorry. This is one of our little girls from AMG we'll share about. But it's contrasted by just lack of opportunities for jobs, and so they wash clothes and whatnot. But it's a joyful culture. We've grown to really love these kids and the people of Guatemala. You may hear a lot of bad reputations about Guatemala and the crime and stuff, but reality is it's a few bad apples that really spoil the reputation, spoil the bunch. Marlena, do you want to just...
We went down in 2008 and have been there 5 years, and the first 6 months were language school. This just shows a couple of pictures. We went down, we were pregnant with our fourth, and she was born 6 months later. We finished language school, moved to the children's home, and then she was born. Okay. We lived for the first 2.5 years at the children's home, where there were about 50 kids, and our roles were basically working with child sponsorship, discipling the older kids, Chad with the older boys, and working with some of the communication newsletters. So we learned a lot. Probably our main reason for even being there was to be mentored by the other missionary couple who had been there for over 20 years and just learn from them and really learn what the daily life was like for these kids coming to the home and why they were even there. A lot of the reasons why they were there were, the reasons were eye-opening to us after being there and just realizing that it was more than around 80% of kids in institutions worldwide have one or more living parents. And so for us, that was eye-opening because we realized many of the kids, even at this home, had a mama, most of the time a mom, sometimes a dad, but usually a mom who was still in the picture, but there wasn't a lot being done to help solidify that relationship or why she brought them there, and then they were raised there for 10 or 15 years. So our goal was really to see another option beyond just institutions down there, because adoption was closed in 2008. So when kids are being taken out of the home, right now institutions are the only option for these kids or youth. So we were really burdened to work with some other organizations down there to help develop foster care through the local church. And Chad will talk a little bit about that. But we learned a ton. God had us there for a reason, and he prepared us for what we're doing now at AMG. So there's a picture of our four kiddos. And it's a little interesting. Right now, when we went down, Emmett was five, and now our youngest is five. So we're kind of in that next stage of life after being down there for 5 years. So learning a lot of what the kids are feeling coming back here, and now they're a little older, so they're able to verbalize all of the changes and why things are different. And something that happened the other day that was kind of cute, Annabella, our five-year-old, she's learning her letters, and so we were working on the letter P, and she was drawing or coloring a picture of a penguin, and you would think she would color it black and white, and I didn't even notice it right away. I put it on the refrigerator, and then I realized she colored it like a tropical bird. It had red and green and blue, and it looked like the Guatemalan quetzal instead of a penguin. So things like that that don't really register for me, that we're learning how to parent well our kids that are growing up in another culture. So that just gives you a taste of family life. Oh, this is another picture. Emmett, this past year, had to do a project for social studies, and he had to draw or build a community, some type of community service or building, and so he chose McDonald's. And he automatically put in little Lego guards with guns, because every building down there, anywhere you go, whether it's a gas station or if you've ever been there, that's what you have. And so that was very normal for him. We didn't tell him to put those there. He just automatically did it. So those are the types of things that we are learning. And then this last slide just shows one of the main the Day of the Dead is a Guatemalan holiday on November 1st that they celebrate with kites and in the cemetery. So anyhow, it's just a little cultural taste of some of the traditions that they have there that we've been able to experience. So
Marlena has been, I couldn't do what I do without her. There's days where she longs to be more connected. But with four kids at the young age, it's obviously key that she's mama to these four little ones and discipling them. But she's a prayer warrior and teaches me a lot about trusting God and praying. And we've seen a lot of answered prayers that we know you all have been influential on. But it's been cool to see just how God has been faithful and answered these prayers. AMG International, 3 years ago, we transferred missions, and our main mission statement is our vision is that we envision a day where everybody will have a chance to hear the gospel. We know that's a dream, but that's our hope. AMG's in 34 countries around the world. But their key is believing in the national worker. There's actually very few of the 34 countries that actually have a white person there, because we believe in equipping the nationals. In Guatemala, there's four families, which is kind of an exception. But the mission statement is, we exist to advance with compassion the command of Christ to evangelize and make disciples around the world through national workers and in partnership with like-minded Christians. And that's been pretty refreshing, the partnership with like-minded Christians, working with other organizations that have that same mission, but want to do it together, not create our own little K kingdoms, but the big K, his kingdom. And it's been neat to see. This kind of shows you a lot, like the map. This is a map of Guatemala, and those little dots represent the communities. We're kind of spread along the population belt. What AMG does is we work with families and children. There's about 8,000 kids within 30 centers. So the kids are with us from 8 to about 4 or 5 o'clock, and they get a meal. They get a breakfast, a little, we call it refacción, and they're getting an education. But more than anything, we're hoping they're getting love. We're trying to keep them, give them a little hope in who Jesus is. But we can't do that without the church. And so the last couple of years, that's been one of our, we call it church mobilization. How do we get the church involved? AMG as a whole, we've kind of ignored that piece and really come alongside the church. So now it's how can we make the bride as beautiful as she is versus the parachurch organization kind of becoming the response part, and how can the church in that community exemplify Christ's love. So this just shows a very dark picture of a school. Sorry about my slides. Here's some beautiful little kids in our schools. From 3 years old to about 18, they come into our program, and they get computers. Fifth grade and up go to a camp year-round. We have about 45 weeks of camp, so fifth graders on up go. And what's cool is, like, the lady that cuts my hair that I met randomly as, let's see here, 3 years ago, she started cutting my hair. And 2 years ago when we transferred to AMG, I was telling her about our changes, and I didn't know her from Adam. You know, we were just talking, and she says, AMG, I when I was a little guy, you know, little gal, I grew up in that 4th of February project, and this is where I came to know Christ. And a lot of people, alumni, since it's been going since 76, will come up to us when we have our little AMG shirt on. We'll go into McDonald's, and a worker will come up to us and say, you're a missionary there? And they're 30, 40 years old. So it's really cool to see how AMG, and specifically this camp, for many of them, they're coming from dirt floor, tin houses, and this is a breath of fresh air, literally. And so we have an awesome staff there that just gives their life to discipling these kids 1 week out of the year, and it's a highlight for these kids each year. And the public schools, that some of them are like an after-school program, our schools, and some of them are full-fledged schools, but the public schools see the impact and allow them to have school off for a week to come to camp. This is Dr. Karina, and she's the local doctor that we have that sees the kids, and Marlene, she's the dentist. So all the kids have access to basic medical care. I'm going to hit fast forward just a little bit. We have a hospital that sees about 16,000 patients up in the north in a rural area. And so we have a full-fledged team up there, and then medical staff comes down, like U.S. doctors and medical teams will come down to actually help out. But what I want to share with you, this is our vision. Over the last few years, as a team of directors, we've been trying to really put into practice and onto to paper what we hope to see happen. And so over here we have a child at 3 years old, and that's when they come into our program. And the problem is to get them to what we, our two main goals is to take in a child and restore them, so when they're a young adult, as an image bearer of God. What does it mean for them to have purpose? What does it mean for them to have a vision for the life and be restored to his image, and also to give them purpose and vocation? So many of these kids lack opportunity. But the problem is there's a lot of things pulling down. The reason we have like a ravine here is because many of our kids live in ravines. So it's fitting. And in here, if you can't read it, there's sex, sin, desires, broken families, peer pressure, violence, drugs, lack of opportunities, physical sexual abuse. In all these things, Satan is just using to pull these kids down. And how can we create a safe way for these kids to cross all of these threats that threaten to allow them to be who God wants them to be? And so you can see these different pillars or building blocks, we call them, in order to make this bridge. And up at the top are our partners. So we have the local and global church and a number of other organizations that I'll pass for now. But it's a collective effort that we are trying to work together with other organizations in order to help these kids. But I come back to the church because we really believe that the local church has to be the answer. This is where we come in. God, 2.5 years ago, 6 months before you guys, Pastor James, and I see a number of faces that came down to Guatemala and blessed us. You can't see you, but you're there. It was so refreshing and so cool because this team came down. We had never had a church team come, like of any of our supporting churches come down. You guys were the first church to send a group down and bless us. And in faith, we were hoping, again, sorry about the, that is a little old building that was demolished and reconstructed. And much from the offerings of all of you that helped to make that happen. At the time, we had no employees. It was me. And we were praying, there's kids here that are being physically, sexually abused. These kids grow up in 8, 10, 12 people per house. They're unparented, and it's rampant. And there's no response mechanisms. There wasn't in AMG, let alone in the government. The government's so broken that the Human Rights Department tells us to try to convince the parents just to stop. Tell the parents to stop beating their kids. They have a backlog of thousands of cases even to respond. They try to bribe from us to give them a car so that they can respond quicker. So it's just a very, you know, you talk about culture shock. And, you know, I'm down there just deer in headlights trying to figure out how does this happen. Well, in the meantime, man, I'm bummed. So this is a really pretty picture, if you believe me, of the building that you guys helped restore. And we hired our first employee, Carla. And Carla is a woman of God, a missionary to her own people. And she is right. This one's not too bad. The gal in purple, right above her, is a mature woman. She's just a neat, godly woman. And in a minute, I'm going to read a letter from her. She's the one down there right now in my absence helping oversee this team. So God went and provided. At the beginning of our slide said, God sees, God hears, God does, God with. And we have seen God show up in so many ways, and it's his faithfulness, nothing that we have done. This team is a product of God seeing his kids, seeing the hurt and pain, and providing and stepping into the mess and providing people that that want to help and want to love kids. And, you know, this is kind of an international mix here. About 80% are Guatemalan. We have some, I think, one other gringo in there, and then some Brazilians and El Salvadorians and in the mix. But this is a testimony to God's faithfulness. So my job is overseeing them, developing them as leaders. As I shared, I think, in the prayer group, I was convicted about 9 months ago that I was more in love with my ministry than my Savior. And it's just a switch that I didn't realize happened and convicted. What does it mean to really love Jesus? And how can that everything that I do needs to flow out of that? And my hope is that each one of them, if it's not already, they'll be deeper and deeper in love with Jesus. And out of that, that's why we do what we do. And it's a daily battle because you get in the mix of it and you get into the grind and the need is there and you want to help. But it's easy to fall out of love with Jesus without even realizing it. And so that's, as I go back, we've done a lot of development, getting the program up and running. But that's my desire, is that each one of them would know Jesus intimately, and out of that would flow our service to him. So there's 5 different initiatives that we do. We have, like I mentioned, there's 30 schools, but with 8,000 kids, we can't tap into that. So we've selected 7 in the city. We have 7 schools that are in about a 30-mile radius. And right now, 5 of our staff, this is actually the room that was being demolished. This is a room for therapy. It's like the first time any of these kids have sat on a couch. Carla is in the green over there, just a neat woman. She's a social worker and minister to these people. So this is one department. She's running this whole area now. So we focus on prevention. If we can stop the abuse from ever happening, then we're one up. But when we can't, then we detect it. So we're training all of our staff. How do we detect it? We're actually working with the government as well as parents on teaching them how to detect when their kids are being mistreated and abused. And then there's often times where we can't do anything. It happens. And how do we intervene? So now we have to get the police involved and do a rescue. And then where we believe our strength is restoration. How do we give them the hope of Jesus in the midst of this mess, in the midst of the pain that abuse causes? So that's one area. The next one is alliances and partnerships. I talked a little bit about church mobilization. This is a pastor and his wife living in this squatter village, and they are loving on, I think there's 30 single women and just a couple of men that go to their church, and they are godly people living in the midst of it. Our goal is to come alongside these churches and say, how can we help you? How can we assist you? So we're doing that with some, it's a long story, but we're trying to equip them. Is it Viva Days? How do you say that? Staple foods. What can we do? Is it trainings? Things like that to help the church be who God has intended her to be. I'm running out of time here. So in Isaiah, this is where we believe that the church really needs to come alive. I'm not going to read it all, but in verse 16, you have God basically rebuking Israel in Isaiah 1. And he says, I don't want your offerings. I don't want what you have. Stop. And then there's a but, and he says, wash yourselves, make yourselves clean, remove the evil of your deeds from my eyes, cease to do evil, learn to do good, seek justice, correct oppression, bring justice to the fatherless, plead the widow's cause. And obviously Israel had left out the outcast, had ceased. They were great at giving, but not at loving well. And for Guatemala, there's a lot of legalism. And this is our hope and our prayer for the church in Guatemala, that they would really seek to do justice and love the outcast. So foster care is another piece of this that God is bringing about. I could go on and on, and I won't. But the government right now, as we speak, is sitting in trainings with our team from a partner organization. We're putting on training with the government to help teach what does it mean to do foster care? What does it mean to even change the law to allow kids to live with families? God has given favor, and it's nothing we've done. It's just been cool to see him go ahead of us. I mean, we're humbled by it, really, to see how God has allowed this. So pray for the church. Pray that for open doors that families will allow. That's probably the biggest inhibitor. It's a big taboo to what does it mean to allow a kid to come live in your home. So the legislation's happening, but now we need families that will actually take in a kid. And this is a picture of a grandma with her kid, her grandkid. And the idea is how can we help them, and how can we facilitate more people loving kids. And last but not least is discipleship and street ministry. 100% of kids that are living on the streets have been sexually, physically abused. So we have a team that goes out on the streets and oversees trying to convince these kids to leave the street life, which is hard, hence the prevention. And discipleship, again, getting the church involved. So we want to just say thank you to you guys. I'm just going to fly through these photos. Man, that's really ugly. In the background is the little building that we are using right now. God has provided, even from Marty, Bob, and Shirley, and some of you guys came down and gave an offering to help with this current building. Right here. Yes, great picture, right? So you can kind of see part of it, and then there's the roof. It's a silhouette anyhow. We're about 75% done, and this is testimony to God's faithfulness, and this will serve as new offices because it's just we're growing out of space. So our team says thank you. They send their gratitude and their thankfulness to you guys, it's awesome. We're thrilled to be able to just to share what God has been doing. Pray for them. Pray for unity amongst the team. Where is Mark? Mark, we're supposed to leave 5 minutes, and I think I'm right there right now. For questions? Is that okay? There's a video that I'm just going to leave here, and at some point, if you ever want to play it, because I want to. Okay. So I'm going to stop talking now, and if you have any questions, you can feel free to. Not everybody at once. Yeah, Mark. Unity amongst our team. We see God. We see Satan attacking. We're dealing with an infidelity situation right now from one of the team members. And we just see his attacks coming. Obviously, there's human failure. But we know that Satan's not happy with what's going on. So if you can just pray that people, the staff, would know Jesus and that we would be unified. So that would be one. Mara, what would you say? Yeah, I mean, Satan is having his way in Guatemala. So pray that the church, I think that would probably be the second one, that the church would come alive to the reality that that we need to love and love well. So, yeah, Marlena, basically that we're not ignorant to realize that God's not already at work, because he is, and we're seeing that. Yeah, $32 gets the basic, like you can get on amginternational.org and pick a kid, and that gets the basic, the kid gets into our schools. All of our psychology, sports, et cetera, is what we're out knocking on doors, raising extra funds, because it's not part of our child sponsorship package. So, but that does get the kid in. What's that? Yeah, they get 2 meals a day and education, uniform, so, which is a huge first step. But what we're trying to do is how can we really provide then the more profound need for the needs of the child. Yeah. I mean, if I had 40 more minutes, no, I'm just kidding. I won't ask for it. But what's cool is right now God has given us a relationship with the largest private university, Mariano Galvez. They promised 30 scholarships for our best students. So we're partnering with vocational schools as well as universities. It's right now, every year we have like a 50% dropout rate. They get to about sixth grade and we lose about 50%. Seventh grade, 50%. 8th grade, 50%, because the gangs, the abuse, and everything. So what we're trying to do is put a carrot out there, i.e. scholarships, university level. And so pray, creating jobs, industry. Right now we're in the middle of sewing little snowing programs for ladies to sell coffee, because oftentimes. So we can talk more later. I know that I'm cutting into other people's time, but yeah, it is. There's hope, and there's a lot of need. I think that's.
Okay. Thank you, Chad and Marlena. It was good to hear about your update. Dee Coop is going next, and we're going to start off the video. Okay, so can you guys cut the lights completely up here while we run that? Yep. Can you cut the other ones too?
This was made in about 2004, so you can see the time element. There should be a audio that comes in with it.
All faithful to Abe and I during our 40 years. Has been so faithful to Abe and I during our 45 years in Brazil. Time would not permit to tell you all the marvelous things that God has done, but here are just a few. In 1954, Abe and two other missionaries, along with a few government men, were asked to attempt to make a peaceful contact with the Pacas Novas tribe, as the rebel bosses threatened to go into the jungles and kill them all in order to get the rubber sap from the trees. They began to leave axes and bush knives along the...
These lessons, by the way, are corrected by new tribe retirees and local people every Wednesday morning and returned. And if they complete them, they get their 180 lessons, they get a new Bible with their name on it, and they get a big certificate for their accomplishment. Covers starting with the book of John. I have one there in my lesson. It goes through all the New Testament and then goes into the starting in Genesis. I'd been doing this for about 2 months, and then Chaplain came. She said, "Dee, the gal that's teaching Wednesday afternoon is going to have the operation. Would you take her class?" And I said, "Sure, I'd love to." And so I've been teaching ever since 2002, her class. Then when the gal that did the discipleship class on Monday morning had to leave, she asked me if I would take that class. So now I teach Monday mornings and Wednesday afternoons. Our jail is very stark, very plain. There is no TV. The only TV is in the chapel. And I have an hour and a half Monday morning, an hour and a half Wednesday afternoon. Now, my voice would never last for an hour and a half, and the girls would be, frankly, very bored. I have all kinds of gals that come into my class. Some of them know nothing about the Bible. They just want to get out of their cell, because this is the only place they can get out and come to. And some of them know something about God. Some of them think they know something. And others, you'd be surprised to see. Believers back in jail. So what I do on Monday mornings, I have as many visuals as I can get. I start Monday morning, book of Genesis. I have a very good one. It's a grandpa in a tent, just like in the days of Abraham, and telling his little boy how God was in the beginning, how he made the earth. And I have DVDs and videos going through all of the Old Testament, just about. I'm stuck on Isaiah. I have to walk them through. And a lot of it you have to stop and explain and walk them through because they don't understand. When I said in Isaiah 49:16, when I read the verse that God has our name printed on his palm, one girl said, "Man, God's got a big hand." And I said, "Yeah, he's the spirit, his hand. He's got room for everybody on that one." You know, as a whole, I'm very well received. I find the politest people in jail. When I go down the halls with my walker, the prisoners will say, "Chaplain, pray for me. I'm going to court today." If I have to ring about four bells to get through to all the doors I got to go through, if there's a prisoner there when the door opens, they'll hold the door open so I can get through. And Wednesday afternoon, when I left, I'd finished the book of, I had Matthew as visual, can't find Luke visual, but I got like the Nativity story and several other stories in Luke that I get visual. And then I have Matthew verse by verse visual and John verse by verse visual. When I left, we finished John and we'll start the book of Acts visual verse by verse when I get back. So we can cover pretty much the Bible visual as well as talking them through, which I have to explain a lot of things because they do ask a lot of questions. I used to be able to go on Friday afternoon into all the cells and do one-on-one. Can't do that anymore. One of the prisoners, ladies, took a pen and tried to stab one of the nurses. And so they're afraid that if anything happened to us, they would sue us. So consequently, I can't go in and one-on-one, or neither can the chaplain anymore. So if they need to see for some reason, they ask for permission to come out and talk to the chaplain in her office. I write girls that are in state prison that I've taught in our jail, and some of them are doing well. I've asked you when we were praying, and I've written several times in several letters about them, particularly Jackie. She got out this Saturday. I know when I get home, she'll be the first one knocking on my door. Just pray that God will supply a job for her. She's very smart. She's a native of Montenegro, which is a little burg, little town, little country, surrounded by Bosnia, Serbia. She speaks a Slavic tongue. So she's translating for good seed into the Slavic tongue. Now, on Wednesday afternoons, I do topical subjects. And I'm using, I have Dr. Charles Stanley, his son, Andy Stanley. Have you ever done the Passion series? Anybody here ever listened to it by Louis Giglio? It is excellent. If you can get a hold of the one that's the best is How Great Is Our God, you'll be amazed at what God has done to prepare us to know how much he loves and cares for us. When I play that for the girls, they just shake their head. Just amazed. God, from the foundation of the world, had that cross, and he was cared and loved them. I have several other DVDs and videos that I use. I do like Pastor James. I made an outline, only that I give him the answers, and verses and et cetera, and make a copy, at least one page, for each girl can take them back to her cell and study on her own. As a whole, they're very thankful. They'll thank me for coming. They'll thank me and tell me how much they've learned. I've only had one girl that gave me a problem. It was teaching Romans 1. Now, when you get into Romans 1, you get into some difficult subjects, and homosexuality, lesbian activity is one of them. And I didn't just pick that out. I had the list of them. One girl, I could see she wasn't happy, and she was sort of grumbling. I said, "Ma'am, what's wrong?" She says, "I was born a gay. I'm 34. I'm going to die a gay." And I just looked at her and said, "Ma'am, I love you, and God loves you. That's why he sent Jesus to die for you and for me." She didn't say anything. We went on with the lesson. When she went out, the girls have to line out at the door, and the officer at the end is waiting to pat them down, take them back to their cells. She must have been griping, because I heard the officer say, "Now you listen to her. She doesn't have to come here. She's giving her time. She's coming to help you. You listen, pay attention to what she's telling you." Now this was unusual, because a lot of the officers, they don't care 2 cents whether they come or not. We had one day I only had two girls show up, because usually I have 20 to 12. I only had two girls. What happened? You know, even in those things that seem negative or positive, I had the best time with those two girls. They needed just to be able to talk more one-on-one. That afternoon, my chaplain called me. She said, "Dolores, They call me Miss D. In the South, whether you're married or single, you're still Miss. And some of the officers will call me Mrs. Coop, but I'm always Miss D. And she said, Dolores, Donna, one of the girls, had told her there were 10 others in line that she made, one of the officers made go back. And so some of the officers really are not happy that we're there. Some of them are really very favorable. And some of them, I'll go say, I'm done with the lesson, you can come get them. Oh, don't you want to keep them? Some of them will forget that we're even there. So I have to remind them. So we do, like I said, in the afternoon, I do topical things and try to end up with some music. And as a whole, the girls are very respectful, like I said. Another thing we do at New Tribes, us retirees, we call ourselves, we don't call ourselves retired, we call ourselves retreading. We go to the juvenile detention center. This, in the beginning, was run by the state, and it was full when the state was there. Then the state sort of left it run down, and it went to the county. Now the county of Seminole County is running it, and there's a lot less in. We've gone sometimes when nobody wants to hear us. Nobody will come out. So we've been bombarding the place in prayer, and of lately we've had young people that have come out on Thursday nights to talk to us. I had two girls when I left the last Thursday. So you can be praying for us as we go into the juvenile and go into the, that somehow Christ will be seen in us. They might sense how much he loves them, how much we love them and care for them. You know, I had the biggest surprise. Mother's Day this year, I got a telephone call. She said, she was Katie. And you know, I couldn't remember whom she was. And she said, I was going through my file, and I saw the letters that you wrote me when I was in level 6. She said, I wanted to call you and thank you for bringing me back to God. I had to think. And when she said level 6, then the dawn came. I had taught her quite a few weeks in county jail. I mean, when she went with state, because then we had lots of girls. And she'd come to know the Lord. And then she was sent to level 6, which is drug and drink rehab, which is close to SeaWorld. And she spent almost 6 months there. And because of good behavior, she got out early. And I had, she couldn't drive yet, so I met her at Bob Evans' restaurant, and her dad brought her. So I know it had to be, he died in 2004, so it had to be about 10 years ago. And I took her to lunch. She got a scholarship to UCF, to University of Central Florida. She graduated with a business administration degree. And she was out, now she's working for an agency, an insurance agency, and she's studying on the side to get her master's in order to get become a CPA. And that all 10 years she remembered, I was dumbfounded to her to care enough, because that, you know, I don't think of teenagers being that way, for her to care enough. So I invited her to come for lunch at the Latham Center where I lived, and she and her mother came. She's basically the breadwinner for the family. Her mother is a cripple. Her dad died in 2004. Her brother has had a nervous breakdown, doesn't leave the house, doesn't talk. So she's just sort of caring for everybody. She's a beautiful girl, nicely formed. The only thing that's sad, and pray for Katie, they're not in a good church. It's a traditional old church that doesn't really teach the word. It's more legalism than anything. So I called up our chaplain, found she lives in Winter Springs, which is about 30 minutes from where we live. And so I found another church that she can go to, and I hope she will. So just keep praying. You know, what's really hard for these gals when they get out, there's no place for some of them to go. Sometimes they get just back in the same thing. Had one girl, I think she's been in jail 11 times. So just pray that there will be halfway houses and so these gals can get jobs. And in closing, I just want to thank you. I want to read Philippians 1:3-5. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making requests with joy for your fellowship in the gospel, from the first day until now. When I come to Rothbury, I know I'm in home. I know you're praying for me, and I'm praying for you. After I pray for my family, and I start praying for people that help me, you're the first on the list. So I pray for your families, and I pray for, thank Michelle for sending me the CDs and the prayer watch. So I go through the prayer watch with you, praying, and I already prayed for Don Smith because I had open heart surgery, so I got a little idea of what he's gone through and bypass and all. God's so good. Just thank you so much for praying and caring for us and for all the love that you've shown me and for the good meals that we've had while we're here. Just God bless you.
Thank you, Dee. And just for those of you who have kids back there, I already told Joan that we're going late tonight, so just let them play.
How many of you have been to a ball game that your team was losing, and then the last few seconds they tied it and you went into overtime? You remember that? How many of you? How exciting was that? Well, we're going into overtime. Stand up for a moment, at least. Do that. Take a deep breath. Stretch those arms. And we're going to have to switch the PowerPoint over to the computer. Go ahead. Be seated. Got to tell you a story. Some of you, the only reason you're here was hoping that I'd tell a story. But a couple of weeks ago, our kids sent us to Colonial Williamsburg. We took the motorcycle through the hills, and we were just touring the mountains, the beautiful country. But the road came through a tunnel, and we stopped, took some pictures. And as I was getting ready to go, Brenda got on the back, and I was going around just kind of making a quick U-ey, and all of a sudden, the weight of the bike got too far off, you know, to the left, and I put my foot down, and I'm holding the bike up. The bike is 600-plus pounds. I've got 20 pounds in the luggage, saddlebags. I've got a 60-pound bag on the luggage rack, and I have my wife on the back, and finally, I just had to lay it down because she didn't put her foot down. And the reason she didn't put her foot down was they were glued to the pegs, but she didn't know. If she would have known that all she had to do was put her foot peg out, I wouldn't have had to lay it down. But we weren't moving. We were just tipping. That's why we have missions conferences. Because sometimes we just need to be reminded of what we need to do. And there's a whole world out there that needs to be reached. And we're just reminded through missions conferences that the job's not done and there's still a lot more to do. Is it not working? Okay. What I'm going to do when we get this up and going, I'm going to just share with you what the Lord's been doing. Some of you remember the journey that we've been on the last 14 years. We went to Bancroft, and it was a bit of a struggle. And the ministry was actually going downhill each year, losing more and more campers. And it got to the point where we were really thinking that we might have to close the ministry. We were all thinking that maybe it was all done. And, well, the Lord had other plans, as I'll show you here in just a moment, maybe. You want me to exit out of this and bounce it back up there real quick? How many of you could be back here at 6 in the morning? Yeah, Doug can.
We had it working earlier.
You want me to just fly by the seat of my pants? Doug, let's just forget it. Let me let me go to one particular slide for me. All right, let me just share with you. I think how I'm going to do this. Anyway, 7 years ago, the Bancroft Bible Camp was about as low as it could go. We had 153 campers, and the board and I knew that if something didn't happen, that we would probably have to close the ministry. We had just gone down so far, and God had different plans, and I'm going to share that with you. But just to kind of an idea, in 1984, they had 258 campers, 1985, 284, 1986, 326, 1987, 373. That was in the heyday of the ministry. Keep on going. You're going to take away my screen so I can't see what I'm talking about. But anyway, that was the heyday. And then around 1990, it started going downhill. We left Bancroft, or we left the Tennessee area in 1993. We came back to Michigan, if you'll remember. And if you would have asked me when I left that area, I would have said Bancroft will flourish. And another camp that our kids went to, Tapawingo, would probably have died. And just the opposite happened. Tapawingo made the change and it started growing, and Bancroft was going downhill. You got it. All right. '87 was the high year. We were 373. Then it began to fall. In 2007, we had 153 campers. This is what I had at the beginning. I was just asking the question that, 25 years ago, nobody would have ever guessed that Bancroft would be where it was. This past spring at our church, there was another church in our community that 10 years ago had 100 people on a Sunday morning. Today, that church is closed, and our church now owns the building. Earlier this year, I was visiting one of our supporting churches. It was one of the largest churches when I was pastoring in Bristol. I drove by that, and that church is for sale. Who would have thought 10 years ago that that church was for sale? I'm just going to find out here in just a moment that there have been three camps in our area that have closed over the last few years. All I'm saying is what I was going to challenge you with earlier. Where will Rothbury be in 10 years? Can't assume it's always going to be here. There's got to be a fire. There's got to be a passion. There's got to be a reason to exist. And then we, as part of it, have to be a part of that motivating factor of moving forward for the glory of God to see things happen. Well, Bancroft was at the bottom of the barrel. It was our lowest point was 173. The board realized something had to be done, otherwise the camp was probably going to have to close. So an all-summer day camp was introduced. 2007, we had 153. That was the low point. We started a day camp, 195, 252, 260, 282, and oops, I forgot the 12. There it is, 299. And this year we hit 306 campers. The last time Bancroft had 300 campers was way back then. 1990. Plus, in the past 29 years, there have been 4 years where we've had more campers than what we had this year. In the past 6 years, we've doubled the attendance. So we're celebrating God's many blessings. This is something I did just recently before camp ended. You know, we know the song, Count Your Many Blessings, name them one by one, and it will surprise you what God has done. Well, I began to do that. God has been blessing Bancroft financially. Not that we're rolling in the dough, but he certainly has blessed us. I didn't have it in this part, but when I became the director, we were borrowing from our reserves just to survive. That's where we were. We didn't have enough income to even float. We had to borrow from the reserves. So in the last few years, this is what God has done. We've remodeled our chapel. We built a beautiful craft room. You can't see that, but it's a huge mural in there for the crafts. We have a human foosball building, and that's where you've played foosball with the rods where you turn. Well, we got a human foosball. The kids go in there, they hang it under ropes, and they play foosball. We do caving, paintball field this year, new swing set. We have a new activity field that's being developed. A guy was doing some developing around us. He did this work for us and probably did $250,000 worth of excavating for us for nothing. We got a bus, which only means that we're able to take the kids caving and tubing and kayaking and things that we weren't able to do before. We have an amphitheater. We have not one, but three zip lines. We have newly painted buildings. We have a climbing wall. We have two octoballs. You want more information on that? Larry and Jim. That is a game that the kids love. I don't understand it. It cost about $300 to build that one, that climbing wall. We've got over $12,000 into it, and they're saying, octoball, octoball, octoball. We just put an addition on our rec building this spring. That was a miracle that took place. I was working for my son. He's got a sporting goods store. I was helping him out. The phone rang. I took it. One of our CAPS graduates asked me if we had any financial needs. I don't know what planet he came from. I did. I laughed and I said, Tim, I said, we're a faith ministry. There's always. He said, is there something you want to do? And he said, I'm going to be sending you $25,000. And we put that addition on this spring. We also put an addition onto the kitchen. We're doing some remodeling then and there. We've started kayaking and tubing. We've got over $3,000 worth of activity equipment. We got a new Skag lawnmower. We got a Bobcat skidster. We got a truck and a van. All I'm trying to say is that the last few years, we've been able to do things that nobody would have even guessed that Bancroft would be able to accomplish. And so in the last few years, we've seen God's blessing upon the camp. We've been able to see a development that's just amazing. The number of kids that are coming in is exciting. Churches in the area are getting excited. Pastors are getting excited. Parents are getting excited. And so it's just really neat to see what God is doing with Bancroft Bible Camp. So that's a quick review. And we're going to get out of here before 8 o'clock yet. But any quick questions? We're not going to take that story. Yeah, I don't know that we could cover all of that right now, but we needed to develop a camping program. We had facilities, but we didn't have really a lot of a camping program. So we had to develop a camping program, and that's what we've been doing with all this stuff. And that does create an excitement and enthusiasm, and people see that they can drive by now, and they see that Bancroft is alive. Things are happening there.